Off the ball. Rugby.
There was so much debate about Carberry around 7 or 8 years ago. And here we have a guy now playing for Bordeaux in France and kind of discarded by the Irish system as well. And
join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Yeah, you're very welcome along. This actually reminds me of quite recently. This is Johnny Ward, and John Duggan was presenting. Shane Keegan was caught in Christmas traffic, as was I. So it looked like JD was going to be just talking to himself for about half an hour, or maybe even longer. Kind of a monologue. JD started the show, and then I was on the bus in, I think it was on the 16 of the number 9, and there was a lady driver, and she just made this really, really mad manoeuvre to take over all traffic on sort of Wexford Street. And I got here in time. But Cameron Hill actually isn't here yet, even though he's in the room somewhere, but he's just, or he's in the house somewhere, but he's not in the studio. So I'm going to start the news round on my own. And the news is, so the first bit of news is Arsenal boss Mikel Arteta says it looks like Bukayo Saka will be out for more than 2 months after having an operation on his injured hamstring. Now, we are still in 2024, and imagine if I were to say to you at the start of the season, Man City would be 50-1 to win the league and Liverpool will be 3-1 on going into the start of the new year. That is a mad situation. But Arsenal look to be the only danger to Liverpool at the moment. That is until this Saka news came along, and the England winger, he went off in the first half of the 5-1 thrashing Crystal Palace. Now, subsequent to this, Arsenal did beat Ipswich Town, but were a much weaker team without him. Mikel Arteta has said it is hard to predict the timeline for Saka's return.
We're just working in resolving the first one and go day by day. Obviously, when you look at his history in 6 years, it's incredible. I mean, it's very difficult to find a more robust player in the league, especially at his age, when the load goes like a spike, national team, club, everything. So that's fine. It's an injury. We have to go over it, and he will be fine. No, I think there will be a lot of factors that are contributing to an injury like this. But we are looking at it and try to do it better if we could. But because nobody knows, maybe you think I'm doing everything perfect, and perfect is not what that muscle needs. That muscle needs something else that we cannot control. So I don't know. Yes, the sample in this case is very small because he had very little issues. But looking at him, the way he recovers from game to game and stuff, we can be hopeful that we can make that period shorter. But how shorter is a significant injury. So that's why we have to be very careful that when he comes back, he's in the right way and with the right form. And then we're going to have to manage him because he's going to be out for a long period.
Yeah, that was Mikel Arteta talking about Bukayo Saka. Very worrying news for Arsenal. Cameron Hill, I mean, you literally had one job. I mean, there's like, you know the way they say that the closer you live to work, the more like you are to be late. Yeah. Or, you know, the further the distance, the more care you'll take to get. Like, you were literally in the building and you still missed the start of the news round.
Yeah,
I was great, by the way. It was great.
Oh, it's first 5 minutes. It's going straight in the IMRO.
It is. I mean, would that be for 20? What 20, year would that
2025. Is it kind of, yeah.
I've always like played down the relevance of these awards primarily because I've never been involved.
Until now. It's very much a I broke up with you, you didn't break up with me type of situation. Yeah.
There's been a few of them.
Yeah. We're bang in the middle of the holidays now. Where do you fall on the discourse of Happy New Year? Can we start saying it now?
Well, you see, again, if you'd actually been here, that's exactly how I opened the start of the show.
The cosmos lined up.
If I'm at Leopardstown this time of year, say the 26th, 27th, particularly around now, I don't know whether to say Happy Christmas or Happy New Year, but that was actually how we started the show.
Interesting.
We were talking about 4 minutes ago.
Okay.
When I've already met you today. We spoke about what we're going to talk about in the show, what has passed, what is passing, what has come. And then I have no idea how this happened, but you literally missed the start of the news round. You're 2 seconds away from me. And you just
you don't think it was a vote of confidence that I said Johnny can handle this.
It was a vote of no confidence, really, putting me under more pressure. And you know, the vote of confidence, it's normally preceded by dreaded.
Mm.
To be fair, how was your Christmas?
It was good. Brief.
Mm. Is it still Christmas?
I think it is. I think people see. I was at the first day of the Leopardstown Festival on Stephen's Day, and
didn't see much.
Well. Yeah, didn't see much at all. I mean, it was one of those where I think part of our travelling party was like, only the Irish would turn up in 20,000 strong to go see nothing for 2 hours.
You can see your race course.
Yeah, exactly. You can see what's important. But yeah, already the people I was meeting, the discourse of how was your Christmas, it was very much a past tense affair. So that's kind of where I stand. I think from today you can ask any plans for the new year. Also, Happy New Year if I don't see you.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's a complicated one. Some people feel very strongly about it.
Yeah, I mean, essentially we live in a borderline atheist country now, or certainly a country where, you know, the religious nature of it has completely gone since I was a kid. So the whole Christmas thing for me is a complete fad at this stage, and it's just like this mad commercialism and this sense of, you know, having to buy presents even though you don't really want to. But you can say, and this is not a human construct, it is actually the start of the new year on January 1st. So we can agree that, you know, a new year does herald the start of something different, like the 21st of December when everyone goes to Newgrange for the shortest day of the year. It is actually something magical that goes way, way back in time. And there's always that feeling. I do feel this time of year it's kind of like, you know, you'll have a lot of promises and plans to do better next year, which you may or may not break, but, you know, maybe you'll start going to the gym, you'll do Dry January, or you'll just take up something that might change your life.
Yeah. Are you a New Year's resolutions boy, or do you buy into that stuff?
Yeah, like, I do to an extent, yeah. And I do feel January is a good time to start fresh. The days are getting a little bit longer, and people say it's a bleak month. I don't find January particularly bleak. I like the winter, and I do think the likes of the Dry January, going down on a health buzz in January, actually is a great way to start the year.
I think it's great.
In theory.
It's a real head down, do some work kind of month. It feels like what September should be when everyone goes back to school and stuff, but no one really takes that seriously. Because it's like, oh, we've only, what, so many weeks till Halloween. And Christmas is only around the corner. Whereas January, it's like you're so far from everything else. You're in what T.S. Eliot describes as the wasteland, the roads of the contagious hospital. So, you are, yeah, it is bleak, but everyone just kind of gets on with everything, and we'll see in February.
The Wasteland.
Yeah. Have you ever read it?
No, I've not read any T.S. Eliot.
Very bleak.
Do you have the book?
Do I have the book? It's a poem. So it's like,
okay.
Epic poems. That I think it's like 8 or 9 parts to it.
Okay.
But fascinating read, and just kind of out of the darkness comes the light sort of thing. But there's a lot of bleakness is basically his point.
Eliot Smith fan?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot of bleakness there as well.
Huge fan of Eliot Smith.
There we go. If you'd been here, 1 o'clock, we could have trashed this out. What age are you now, actually?
I'd prefer not to say.
Okay, well, that's quite interesting. What would you, your beard has certainly grown.
Yeah, I was compared to Jerry Adams earlier today, and I think...
That's not a bad shout.
It's not a bad shout. Yeah. I think, it's one of those where it looked like Jerry Adams, and it was said in a timbre by a certain colleague of ours that it was like, that needs to probably be shorn back a bit.
Shall remain nameless. I did read 2 books. I was actually sick over Christmas, so I did read 2 books practically in 3 or 4 days. One was Provided You Don't Kiss Me by Duncan Edwards on Brian Clough, which JD just pulled it out before the show, the last show before Christmas. He had a present for, I think he had a present for us all, but he gave me this book, and it was, oh my God, like it was like The Racket, which I actually bought as a gift for somebody else. It won the William Hill Award for Sportsbook of the Year back in 2006 or 7 maybe. It's such a good read. It's just like I couldn't leave it down. And then the Senna Maloney book on Sophie Toscan du Plantier, and that was gotten to me by my 6 month old. It's gotten for me by my 6 month old son, which is quite impressive.
Wow, yeah.
Not only did he know that I've, you know, interest in that sort of stuff, but he also procured it like from a bookshop or otherwise.
Yeah.
So I read that in about 2 or 3 days.
He's an independent retailer fan rather than buying online.
He is. He's a fan of being sick himself, actually, since I got sick. So it's been an interesting Christmas. But my January buzz is health and be healthy and read a lot more. Read a lot more because I have a lot of books to get through.
I burn through so many books at Christmas. It's great. It's the time of year because you're sort of confined and it's much quieter. And January is the same where you just get through a lot. I know so many people in my kind of friend circle who put like a 50 or 75 book challenge. That's how many I'm going to read next year.
How many?
50 to 75. Someone did 100 books a year.
Yeah, it's 2 weeks.
Which is kind of, you know.
Very good for you.
Really good. But
because we are living in a dystopian reality on two fronts. One is that obviously we've had the warmest year on record.
Yes.
Two is just Mobile. We've had this discussion. It's not a mobile phone anymore. It's mobile internet. Like, mm-hmm. Nobody makes phone calls. It's basically having the internet in your pocket. And people have basically turned into zombies. And one way of not doing that is actually by reading a book. Mm-hmm. Going back to the smell the book, read the book, have it in your hands, and don't have your phone anywhere near you.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's a perfectly uplifting way to start our news round and start the build up to 2025.
I mean, mobiles, whatever you want to call them, they are amazing, but they've turned us all into complete mush. I mean, if you go on holidays now, it's just looking at people in different countries on their phones all the time. That's literally all it is, regardless of where you are, pretty much.
Yeah, people don't get people of like generations senior to mine don't get why we put stuff on Instagram stories. Like, why are you doing that? You know, Shane Hannon, for instance, to call him out, I know he's listening, doesn't get why
happy Christmas / New Year, Shane.
Yeah, of course. Happy festive period. We can just catch all. But he doesn't get why people film at sporting events or at concerts saying, you know, you want to be in the moment. But for my generation and younger, it's more a case of you mightn't know your friend is there. And if you tag, say, the Three Arena or you're at the Aviva, it means, oh, you're here too. Sure, we'll meet up afterwards. Like, it's that more than just, I've got to savor this because this is the best way to capture that because my memory just won't cut it. I think it's more that, to be honest. I think people don't really appreciate how actually sentimental younger generations can be and that they actually do remember this stuff and like to preserve it. My brother's getting a Polaroid for his year abroad Australia. Yes. And that's the best idea, I think, because they're forever. And I love to, I like doing Polaroids and I like sending Christmas cards because I think there's a bit more of an object permanence.
I've actually learned more, by the way, shout out to the SS. That's a person, by the way, and she knows who I'm talking about and she knows why.
I hope so.
Yeah, she knows why I call her the SS.
Problematic.
Well, on the way to a wedding, actually, with her partner, who shall remain nameless.
Problematic.
I found a lot about you in the last 10 minutes. You're probably the only person ever, right, who couldn't, quote T.S. Eliot, is a fan of Elliot Smith and also loves the darts.
Yeah.
You love the darts.
Cameron,
you are an absolute
very
enigma.
Lonely.
And you
very
won't tell
lonely.
Us your age. No. I mean, you're a man roughly 30-odd.
I'm timeless.
Tell us about the darts. You've been watching it.
Yeah, it's been great. There was a 9-darter yesterday, Damon Hetta, and then he went on to lose against Luke Woodhouse, who's been the surprise package of this tournament, it's fair to say. I think anyone, like, the same way inclined as me, was just waiting for, oh yeah, Christmas is great, but Will O'Callaghan put up the meme of the guy waiting, and they all had darts shirts on. It's like, come on, let's get back to this.
What does somebody of your, I would say, like, at this juncture of reasonable, if not better than reasonable intellect, what attracts you to the darts?
I was saying it on the news round before Christmas. It's the idea that a crescendo can come out of nothing. The Damon Hetta
nine darter.
Yeah, yeah. Nothing precedes it that tells you, oh, he's about to do a 9-darter. It's one of those where it's so isolated and can be created out of nothing. And the hype on that final visit where they get the triple 20, triple 19 and a double 12 is brilliant fun. Like, you stop everything and just watch that for about 5 seconds. And that's what I really enjoy. It also just looks like a brilliant occasion. It's one of those, there's a big kind of culture war at the moment around rugby and whether it's worth a ticket, and I would be of the persuasion, and I'm not afraid to say it, that an Irish rugby game at the moment in terms of value for money is up there with like the very worst, because the tickets are far too expensive. You're either standing up or sitting down mass like every time someone comes in for a pint, or you're getting blasted the hell out of it by the tannoy.
Can I just cut across you there? No,
okay,
because I kind of meant to bring up rugby in the previous conversation, but you have to come back to the darts. My utter nadir for everything that's wrong with rugby and life at the moment was at the Ireland-France game. And
yes,
in fairness, I shouldn't have been at that game, that classic game in Lansdowne Road.
That is 2 years ago.
2 years ago.
Yeah.
And there was a moment where Ireland had like a line out 5-10 metres from the line. And there was an old man in front of me. He was wearing like a tweed coat. And I'm speculating that he was a, you know, refugee from the old Lansdowne Road. He used to go to the games when Ireland were pretty, you know, not great, shall we say, and usually lost to France and England and often Scotland and Wales as well. But he knew the old Lansdowne Road and what it was like in those days. And the SS's husband who's listening knows exactly what I'm talking about here, right? And a woman got up in the seat ahead of him to take a photo. She had to stand up to take the photo of the line out. He gently poked her in the back as if to say, I'm an old man. I actually just cannot see the line out here.
Yeah.
She looked around rudely at him, continued to take the photo, maybe two photos, maybe three, maybe a bloody selfie thrown in with the owler behind her who couldn't see anymore.
Yeah.
And then sat back down whilst the line out was now taking place. I was like, this is literally in a nutshell what is wrong with rugby at the moment. It has become an Instagram event and it's terrible atmosphere. It is so bad.
It's really dour. And you look at, say, in when we look ahead to 2025, we will have, I think, England up first in the Aviva in the Six Nations, which should be a massive occasion. That tickets will be probably a bit too expensive for a lot of people coming up from the country with having to consider going to a hotel or booking travel and all sorts like that. But you see, between those Six Nations games in Dublin this year, sandwiched between them, Bows are taking on Shamrock Rovers on February 16th. And I bet you any money that that will be by far and away a better atmosphere, completely organically, where there's not loads of music piped in and there's not all these light shows and they don't have to try every single trick in the book just to maybe get the crowd somewhat going, that it will be completely natural. There'll be maybe flares, who knows? We'll have to wait and see. But just the colour that they'll bring and the revelry, and it is the hottest ticket in town at the moment. I'd find that far more attractive than an Ireland-New Zealand game if it was taking place in the Aviva right now.
I love that. We went off the main road and we went kind of, we got slightly lost, but now we're on the main road to the darts.
Yeah.
This has just been such an uplifting kind of conversation as we close out 2024.
It was worth waiting for, is what you're saying.
But again, hashtag had one job.
Yeah.
But yeah, you make a great point. It could be it probably needs to be a really good level to have a good chance of a 180. But there is that nine dart finish, sorry. But there is that kind of, this could come out of nothing.
It could come out of nothing and the crowd completely get in. And it's the one sport where someone just being ever so slightly short of doing something, they're instantly booed. Like, it's ruthless.
I went to the darts once. Only had two pints. That was honestly the biggest mistake of my life. Just, what was I thinking? I mean, it just, everyone got drunk around me and I was just like that kind of, I just should have kept going.
Just the last point on that.
Yes.
It was the one thing I really wanted remember in COVID where they'd have the crowd noise for the empty stadiums. I really wanted them to pipe in some Ali Pali kind of noise in the background. Just like fans having the absolute best time while, I don't know, West Brom take on Burnley in a dour nil-all draw.
Michael Verney, fan of the show, he's a big fan of the BDO darts, like the lesser grade.
The culture war.
No score. And it's like, that's the January then that brings you back down to earth. We are back to the news round. Pistol Pete, if he's on sound, and Conal producing today, they've probably lost their train of thought here. But I did mention that Arsenal beat Ipswich 1-0. Brighton were booed off, though. They were held to a nil-all draw by Brentford at the Amex, which is kind of a mad one. And back to the League of Ireland, Will Patching has completed his move from Derry City to League 2 side Carlisle United on a 2.5-year contract. Kind of evoking memories of Roddy Collins when all these players used to come from the League of Ireland. The Patching one's interesting. We did a lot of the X Spaces show after the League of Ireland this year, Cameron.
Yeah.
And Patching was, in some respects, symptomatic of Derry's season, that he was too in and out for me and kind of didn't fulfil his potential in the season. And now he's gone and Rory Higgins is gone as well.
Yeah, you'd really worry about Derry. Like, where are Derry at next year in terms of their prospects for the league? Because you would have put them as one of, I would say maybe four teams to go and do it next year.
I had them ahead of Shells in the betting. I'm now flipped. Shells are second or third in the betting.
It feels like there's a massive exodus going on there between the players that have been kind of shipped over the last couple of weeks. And I honestly don't know how they rebuild now. It looks like a thoroughly unattractive thing for a lot of players. They don't seem to be able to bring anyone in. And I'd be worried for anyone up there in the Northwest in terms of what the prospects are going to be. Like, coming fourth in a year where you've two chances to get Europe, and the chance you had at Europe was so disappointing. We don't have to relitigate that, but like, where do you go from here?
As a counter, right, and I do feel Derry have money. They've done great work on the stadium, by the way. I got saw a photo of it yesterday. So, and this, as I say, they still have good players. But I will not be ruling out Bowes have signed Colin Whelan from Derry, right? I'm not ruling out Bowes from making something of a, if not a title challenge. I think they should be a lot better next season. I have a lot of faith in their management. And on the women's side, Kieran Kilduff left Athlone Town, obviously, and to take over Dundalk on the men's side. But Athlone Town have appointed Gordon Brett. Gordon, I've known for a few years, Gordon, top lads. He's a former player for Athlone, and he will work. He's the head coach. He'll work with Colin Fortune, who was also former Galway United. Best of luck to Colin and Gordon, and unbelievable work on the men's and women's, particularly sides. The women's side, particularly in Athlone. On the rugby front, Leinster have opened up an 11-point lead at the top of the URC with a bonus point win at rivals Munster. Josh Van der Fleer, Luke McGrath, Sam Prendergast and captain Caelan Dora scored the tries for Leo Cullen's team in a 28-7 victory at Thomond Park. Prendergast, the new kid on the block, he was man of the match and he kicked 8 points for the league leaders. Tom Ahern grabbed Munster's try early in the second half, converted by Billy Burns. We won't have time probably to play the Caelan Dora's clip here, but you're making a point here that, you know, and Mac Hansen's comments about sort of refereeing, it's a bit of a culture war in rugby. You don't normally hear this. Something I have a great time for in rugby is respect for referees.
Yeah, and there was definitely some stuff last night on the Premier Sports coverage around the Josh Van der Fleer try, and maybe James Ryan had the ball in for too long in the ruck and that was never called up. It wasn't even looked at, Simon Zebo was saying. So, like, that now that kind of can of worms has been opened, it's going to be very hard to not talk about this. And the fact that Mac Hansen was... We'll play the Caelan Dora.
Let's play, yeah, because we're out of time. It's almost like we've been stretched to allow for your sort of, it's like the bus, it was like the old
baseball here.
The old story about Willie Mullen's mother. They used to just, they're in Carl, Munya Vogabe, there stopped Bagnallstown, and she just rang the station. She was such an absolute legend, Maureen. She'd ring the station and say, I'm running a bit late, just hold that train for you. Like, Miss Mullen's, no problem at all. It's like that for Cameron Hill. Let's hear from Caelan Dora.
It's an occasion we relish down here. Hard place to come and get a win and get a performance. It's a bit of a cauldron, obviously. The Munster supporters get in nice and early. You can hear them from the very start. So we spoke about trying to have a fast start, trying to get ourselves in the game nice and early. I think it was our set piece that laid the platform in the first half. Our line out D and our scrum were very good. Discipline not so good, but no, pleasing overall.
Is it the same tactic you have with most teams? Do you change things up when you come to Munster? Because you seem to apply an awful lot of pressure on them when they have the ball.
Yeah, I mean, we love our aggressive defence. We love going after teams, so it doesn't change too much. Obviously, you've got the inter-bro rivalry, so probably naturally comes up a little bit there. We speak about set piece a lot coming up against Munster. We know they're a very strong set piece team, and we wanted to try and dominate that area. And I think in the first half especially, it was pretty good.
Yeah, Caelan Dora speaking after that 28-7 win over Munster in the URC last night. But just to go back on what we were talking about, the Mac Hansen comments around the referee, it was really interesting that it's created this huge divide. I saw Owen Doyle, former rugby referee, was not happy with what he'd said. Tony Ward was also in the camp of that's just not on. And there is that ethos in rugby of you never question the referee's authority. And I think there's a lot of good that comes from that when you see how some of the referees are treated in other sports and how difficult it is and how there has been a little bit of, for want of a better phrase, more of a football attitude towards referees, which has led to people like Wayne Barron's just saying, I've had enough and retiring. But so that's one aspect of it. And I don't know if Chris Busby, the ref from the Connacht Ulster game or Connacht Leinster game, the other day is on Instagram, but you know that when something like that happens that you're just like, that those DMs are going to be a cesspit for the next few days. On the other hand, I don't think there's enough transparency in what happens when a referee gets a wrong decision. It doesn't seem like there's like many consequences for getting stuff wrong, even really egregious things that they're going to be in, week out. They'll still be refereeing next week. Whereas if you compare the disciplinary procedures for a player who gets a red card or doesn't even play that well, they could be stood down for a week to 3 weeks tops. So it feels like in rugby, they're laws. They're not rules, they're laws. And the laws are upheld by officials who seem to be slightly above it, who don't face consequences for their actions. So I completely understand why there'd be that frustration, in the same way that there was that frustration in the League of Ireland this year, where was it Damien McGrath gave that penalty for Patrick McElhenney which was egregious and really shouldn't have been there. And he was refereeing next week and people were saying, what's the point?
I thought that that whole issue, I remember losing my mind on X-Base that night because I would defend the referee till the cows, preferably the cows come home.
Because he was, as well, yeah, I would too.
Absolutely bought by simulation in this instance. And it's like, it was absolutely a bad call. But at the time, I wasn't 100% sure watching on TV. And like, I've always made this point, referees have a job to do. It's extremely difficult, even if you're the best in the world. And then you fans, players and coaches trying to influence them when they know themselves that it wasn't a foul. So like, if you're going down that route, like, don't be calling out referees for trying to do an honest job. And essentially you're doing a thankless task. Joe Brawley did a great piece, actually. I'm far from his biggest fan, but he did a great piece in the Indo, the Sendo, about the abuse the referees getting, the Gaelic side of it. Really, really, and the money they get, pittance, like absolute pittance. So the referees issue, I'm fascinated by it, and the rugby, you know, the rugby kind of anomaly of the respect that they get. We do have a text from a listener, Instagram and most social media is just a platform for humble bragging. Kind of is, but as Cameron alluded to there, it can get far, far worse than humble bragging. Back to rugby, Connacht and Ulster will both hope to end this year on a positive note this evening. They meet for a sold-out Interpro clash at the Dexcom Stadium from 25 to 8. Quaylen Blade and Jack Carty form a new look halfback partnership for the host, which will be interesting. And Santiago Cordero starting on the wing at the expense of Shane Jennings. Ulster boss Richie McCormack. Sorry, you're supposed to be reading this.
Yeah, I don't know why you took.
You're literally supposed. I'm the host. I mean, why am I reading this? Start off with Ulster boss. It's on the
go from there.
It's like Uncle Albert when he's still in the wheelchair when he's trying to con them. Del was like, "Hang on a sec, you can walk."
I'm sorry, it was very emphasis closing. I didn't want to upset you so early in the show.
Like,
right, Ulster boss Richie Murphy
put a bit of meaning into it.
He's handed a first start to his son Jack at out half as his side looked to end a run of five straight defeats. There is an All-Irish encounter down for decision in the Celtic Challenge this afternoon. Tries from Ivana Kiripati and Beth Buttermer giving the Clovers a 12-10 lead at the last time of checking over the Wolfhounds at the UCD Bowl. Looks like a fabulous day down in UCD as well for some really good rugby. And it looks like a decent crowd because there's a smattering of internationals on both sides. And it's a great chance to see them this year.
Actually, my one of my New Year resolutions is to go to an AIL game. I passed the ground recently.
You have to.
Between Ranelagh and Donnybrook, I wasn't even sure what the ground was. We just saw next fixture and I was like, I've never been to an AIL game. I want to see rugby like it used to be and like lads going for a few pints afterwards on a Saturday and a small crowd and so on and so forth.
Well, the quality is unreal.
Yeah.
And my brother was playing, he plays for Trinity, and Ryan Baird was playing on its return back. He was training against the J1s a couple of weeks ago, and just, it was an amazing experience. And that's like, it's amazing that we have that outlet. You wouldn't get that anywhere else, say in the top level of, say, soccer, where someone drops down for a few weeks to like the local domestic team just to get a few minutes under their belt. But Ryan Baird was there, was apparently absolutely lovely to deal with, and
that's
totally
class.
Bought in. And that's the level there. Like, Fintan Gunn, who was playing for Leinster last night, usually plays with Terenure College when he's not in the side. And you do get that kind of, that drop down of really high quality players to make it an incredible spectacle. Some of the games I saw in the AIL this year, just gone, were fantastic.
We are 53106, aren't we?
Correct.
If you want to mess in on 53106 or other means, what ground should I go to for an AIL game next year? I live in Harold's Cross, so anywhere really in Dublin, give or take, and sell me it, you know, and I'll go along and maybe I'll meet you there. But it's your turn now to talk
about the darts. Yes, indeed. Fermanagh's Brendan Dolan looking to book a place in the last 16 of the World Darts Championship this evening. He'll take on the 3-time world champion Michael Van Gerwen at Ali Pali. Antrim's Josh Rock also has a third round encounter with Chris Dobie, and last year's beaten finalist Luke Littler faces Ian White in the last match tonight. The afternoon session is underway. Ryan Joyce currently taking on Ryan Searle for a place in the fourth round. After that, last year's semi-finalist Scott Williams faces Ricardo Petrescu, and it's 12th seed Nathan Aspinall against Andrew Gilding.
Who wins it, actually?
Who wins the whole thing? Luke Woodhouse is looking very hot. Very hot. He looks like the surprise package. It's going to be between the three Lukes, I think. And then maybe someone else is in there.
Luke is probably 70 now, is he?
Yeah.
Which is still...
Still young. He's getting on, Luke Little.
He's getting on, yeah. No, it is like, in fairness, I kind of go in and out of sports like that, but it's a great spectacle around Christmas and perfectly suits kind of the crack of the time of year. We'll get to racing, but back to the news.
Back to
back
me.
To news really.
Thanks
here.
Very much.
It's good to hear Owen Doyle's already, like, he's prepping for the show by listening in.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, yeah, I mean, he's, I think he's called it so far in terms of the performance of both of us. Actually.
Of both of us, yeah.
I'm not going to give the word to you, but
okay.
Yeah.
It's probably a bit early in the day for it, is it?
We're going to get Doyler to guess your age, actually, as well, because that'll be another part, an aspect of the Football Saturday, seeing as though you're so guarded on it. what about a bit of Scotty Scheffler?
Well, yeah, did you see this? World Golf number one Scotty Scheffler has undergone surgery on a hand
cooking
injury.
Christmas dinner.
Cooking
what
Christmas
are you thinking?
Dinner. Yeah, he suffered a puncture wound to his right palm from broken glass. I don't know what you're doing cooking dinner with glass.
Possibly listen to Elliot Smith or something.
Maybe. No? Yeah, ooh, I don't know. It's caused him anyway to miss the season opening swing in Hawaii next week. He won seven PGA Tour titles last year and is eyeing a return to action at the American Express tournament in mid-January. So get well soon, Scotty.
I can't imagine JD's book, Provided You Don't Kiss Me. I can't imagine a player coming up to Cloughy like saying, boss, I can't play. I just broke my hand there cooking the dinner. Would have been a reaction that would be, shall we say, somewhat off its time.
There's a smack of it, like you could see Duffer saying it in a presser after the game. Like him splitting his pants ahead of on the way into the soccer writers, which was one of my favorite. Just
what did he say?
He completely volunteered this when he was getting.
Yeah, he volunteers a lot of stuff.
But he was saying that he split his pants on the way to the soccer writers, and his mom was stitching them in the back. Just amazing, like the insight.
Just the anecdote that implies, you know, thoughts of his crotch and all that, but also just Duffer. He's done this though, like, and actually, I'm reading some of the Cloughy stuff, and there's absolute Cloughy Duffer comparisons, 100%.
Yeah, I can see that.
Even, and I was actually, you know, we've seen how magnetic he can be, but like, this is what you're talking about, that game at the Aviva Stadium. This is why the League of Ireland has become so magnetic. I got a lot of slagging for saying that, you know, he's made more an influence in the League of Ireland than anyone ever, but I just think he has. We will have to move on to racing, because Factofile, Gallop and Deschamps and I Am Maximus will be clashing for Willie Mullins, who had the first winner today at Leopardstown in the 2:35. This has been a remarkable market, because Gallop and Deschamps, who was beaten by Factofile the last day, has been heavily backed into favours. But I know the way you're thinking as well. Keep an eye out for him at 25-3. We previewed the race yesterday with Steve Ryder on the Racing Pod. Before that, home by the league was up against seven rivals, including Bob Olinger in the Savills hurdle. That's at 2:00. Here I am just taking over again.
Yeah,
actually.
Here you go. Yeah, you can't help yourself, can you?
I will finish up with Imperi Passe. He's going to go off favourite in the Fawhi Novice Chase at Limerick. This goes to post actually in 5 minutes. So this is Limerick's only Grade One, and I will be in Limerick tomorrow. What did you make of Leopardstown? Actually,
enjoyed it. Mm. Enjoyed it. I wouldn't necessarily partake in lots of horse racing, but I do enjoy just the fun and the revelry of it. It's the time of year where all of our cousins come together, so there's that aspect to it too, and we hadn't really seen each other in ages, so it was great to just to have that. Again, the fog probably detracted from it somewhat, like last year was a very clear day and really enjoyable. I kind of get it. I get the appeal now. When you win a race or you back a winner, it's pretty brilliant.
What are your hopes for 2025 on a sporting front? Who wins the League of Ireland?
Oh God, that is tough. I mean, it's pretty unglamorous, but Pats has to be.
I'd be edging towards Pats. Yeah, I do wonder about Shamrock Rovers playing straight into, like, without really having a break. Not sure that'll be ideal. But they didn't start the season well last year, on the other hand. Shells are signing really well. I wouldn't be ruling them out, but I'm actually beginning to think it's probably between the three with bows as sort of dark horses.
I think we're going to get an Irish major winner at a golf major this year as well.
Okay.
I don't know who it's going to be. It could be Rory. Edging towards Shane. Just feel like he had a really good end to the year. And I think it's going to be a really good year for golf. The last time we were talking, on last week's news round, the three Irish golfers joining the LET is massive for the sport in this country. So I think 2025... golf, Irish golf, will have a really, really positive year.
It's been brilliant having you on.
Thank you. Happy New Year, Johnny.
Yeah, let's go to the panel after the break.